This podcast brought to you by the Bose Headset 10.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting direct from EAA Air Venture 2008 at Oshkosh. We're with Mike Kraft, who's chief engineer of the Lycoming Williamsport Engine Division. Mike, Lycoming surprised us with some technical introductions here at the show, and we're standing here in front of probably the major project, the TEO-540A, which is a fully FADEC engine with some interesting innovations on it. Can you give us technical highlights on this engine?
Certainly. We're very excited to be presenting this year. It's a fantastic project for us. We've been working on it for several years. And in fact, this engine and the control algorithms have been flying at previous Oshkosh shows and Sun and Fun. So what you see here is the culmination of a good amount of years of effort. What it is a from-the-ground-up approach to integrating electronic control into the engine. In fact, the IE2 stands for Integrated Electronic Engine. It's kind of the engineering nomenclature for E-squared. And what we did is we basically stripped off much of the mechanical control components of engine and integrated the sensor arrays and the details into the engine to make it fully electronically controlled. There's a tremendous amount of details here, and it's hard to give it justice in a short time period.
Would you consider this a clean sheet engine with a new type certificate?
This is a new type certificate engine. What is common with the existing 540, obviously you have the mechanical, basically the piston, the power head, displacement is the same, but from every other aspect of that, we had to modify the cylinder heads for the injection system, for the knock detectors, common rail system. You've got full sensor arrays on each individual cylinder on that. The accessory housing on the back, the first thing you notice is no magnetos. The other items that you should notice is that there's a permanent magnet alternator on the back, which provides the main engine power once the engine is turning on.
Well, let's start with the fuel injection. Tell us about the fuel system that you used on this.
It's a sequential port injection fuel system. Very common for the automotive industry. So you have one common rail headed to all the cylinders with a set of fuel injectors into each one, each fuel injector individually controlled.
Time pulse
injectors. There's a lot of algorithms that we put back into this that you won't find in the automotive industry. Automotive is a little bit different in that over a period of time, they will allow power in the engine to vary. We actually have algorithms inside of this unit that compensates for engine wear and component wear to ensure that we have the correct power level of the engine that goes through its lifetime. So a little bit different approach there.
And each cylinder has its own feedback loop.
Each cylinder has its own feedback loop. In effect, each cylinder is controlled as its own engine. And that's something that we think is very unique on this approach. And one of the items that we've gone through in our patents on this is that because we've taken individual cylinder approach and individual closed loop, we're adaptive on a cylinder basis. And that, in effect, allows us to very much change the operating equation and operating rulebook for the engine. Even previous FADEC systems, to a large extent, they were a great assistance during transient conditions. But during cruise, probably a good pilot probably could match the performance of the FADEC. What you have here is something very different. No pilot could probably manage each cylinder of the engine on his own on an adaptive basis. And that's really the breakthrough technology here. And that allows us to really take a different approach to the, a lot of the guidelines were constructed today for a mechanically controlled engine, 12% margin to detonation limit. What this allows us to do is it really allows us to take a very different approach because now we're individually controlling and adapting each cylinder.
Now, how about the ignition system?
Ignition system, obviously electronic, it's electronic spark ignition, also controlled by the FADEC. Pretty much, you have two spark plugs onto it. It's a high voltage system. Induction coils, if you take a look at the engine, not that your listeners can see this now, but there's a nice little black homing box on top of it that actually serves a couple purposes. It's to protect the induction coils, but also provides RFI protection.
And how is the ignition system powered, and what's its redundancy?
The ignition, the all primary power comes from the permanent magnet alternator that's mounted on the engine. So once you take ship's power, you start the engine is actually self-powering on the PMA, which you can see the little black small box. It's a high-speed permanent magnet alternator directly integrated into the accessory housing. So you start the engine up, and then on ship's power, start it up on ship's power, and then once the engine's turning, all FADEC, all sensors, all drivers to get it running are running off of the engine. In fact, even during windmilling, on the engine, you have enough power generated, the PMA, to power the electronics and the auxiliaries.
So is this a single alternator system with a battery backup?
The primary source of power is the PMA, and your backup would be on the ship's power.
Now, each individual cylinder, I understand, has its own NOx sensing. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Six NOx cylinders for a six-cylinder engine. Yeah.
Does that suggest that your design strategy, your concern was more towards accommodating a broad range of fuels than pure economy?
We had several strategies integrated into the engine. The answer is yes. What we foresaw was that, first of all, from the standpoint of just performance, okay, if we had 100 low lead or 100 octane fuel forever, to eke out the maximum performance from the engines, you would do that strategy anyways. But what this also allows us to do is it allows us to accommodate in the future fuels that we don't have today that may not be of the same performance without modifying the engine significantly. A mechanical engine, you're talking about mechanical modifications. What we talk about here is for different fuels is that we talk about a different calibration, or we talk about the engine's ability to sense itself when it's entering into detonation ranges. Give you an example. If somebody by accident, okay, put in the wrong octane fuel, the engine would sense the detonation. It would automatically modify its map to move it out of there.
Okay. This, what fuels will this accommodate?
This engine that you're looking at right here, okay, for what you see here is the Lance Air cowl, and Lance Air announced this engine. This engine is a 350 horsepower engine, and it does need the 100 low lead to generate that maximum amount of power. In fact, this scheme right here even allows us on a momentary basis to rate the engine higher than 350 horsepower. That's specific for the Lancer application. You can run this engine on different types of fuels. The question that we need to go looking at towards the future is that as the fuel properties degrade, there's going to be a point where you're going to lose power in the engine. That's just Mother Nature. Okay, so what we're currently doing is we're investigating various types of fuels, how they behave in the engines. We've tested the POC aircraft, which was a single turbo system with not as high as boost. Actually, we did test that on a premium grade MoGas, and the system self-adapted and without a noticeable degradation in performance.
Traditionally, NOx sensing in aircraft engines has been difficult because of ambient noise. How have you solved that problem with this engine?
There are several items that we've done there in the algorithms, basically on filtering and also taking together. There's a lot of what we call inference sensing on this, is that we don't even just take a look at the NOx sensor. We take a look at a combination of readings to see that everything is making sense. And that gets into the general concept of the way that the whole ECU architecture is that we have not only the direct reading sensors, but what we call a virtual sensor, meaning that we're going to take measurements and make certain that we're inferring the right judgment and way the engine control should operate. And that even comes down to the FADEC itself, is that you have two computers in the FADEC, each making a judgment. Well, if one says yes, the other one says no, you need an arbitrator as to what the correct decision is on that stuff. And that's the same approach that we took with the sensors.
And how about sensor architecture? You have a crank sensor, you have a...
crank sensor, cam sensor.
Cam sensor.
And both of those are actually integrated into the accessory housing. Once again, this is to make this engine as light as weight as possible. What we didn't want to do is start with a mechanical engine and start adding sensors to it. We actually redesigned the back of the engine. We redesigned the cylinder heads to incorporate sensors. So they're actually built into the engine. If you strip that stuff out, the engine wouldn't operate.
Where does it come out on weight compared to a traditional...
this engine right here, this twin turbo engine, this is going to be weight neutral. It should be very much weight neutral on that stuff. The more complex the engine, okay, the easier it is to make it work. Obviously, if you took this type of system into, say, our little four-cylinder carbureted engines, which don't have fuel injection now, you're obviously talking about a different ratio. Okay, but on these more complex engines, and it's a great target for this from not only the ability of the pilot to manage the engine, but also from the weight savings. It's very, very positive.
Single lever system?
Single lever system.
And how is the leaning handled? What's the strategy for automatic leaning through the FADEC?
You have two kind of, and this largely comes into how the engine is calibrated in the airframe and how you want the airframe to respond. Is that what we've done is at the end of the day, at max power level angle, you'll have max power. So that's obviously going to richen and optimize the fuel mixture.
That would be a typical takeoff or climb.
Correct. And then when you pull it back, Okay, it's moving. It's going to move it into an optimized economy mode. Now, the transition state largely comes up to the airframer and how he wants the airframe to respond in that step. So we have a great range of flexibility in how we want to operate the engine, and that's where it comes very important for Lycoming and the OEMs to work together to come with that calibration.
Will it be capable of running lean to peak?
It will always run at the optimum leanness when you're back off your max power setting. So the answer there is yes. But the pilot is not going, the engine is going to manage that in all states of conditions. So it's going to move the engine into its maximum economy mode in any condition.
Depending on the power commanded by the pilot, that could be leaner peak or rigid peak?
That's right. If the pilot is looking for a max power condition, it's going to do what the engine needs to do to
and
go to max
does
power
the,
condition.
Does the engine have a specific cutoff point where it transitions to leaner peak?
That's going to come into the airframe engine calibration.
So that'll be up to the OEM, probably.
Yeah, and what we found, particularly on the POC aircraft, is that we've engaged some very good test pilots and gotten some very good customer feedback on how we've handled that transition state. But each airframe is unique, and the response of the airframe is also up to the airframer and how he wants to do that. So we have a large amount of flexibility to accommodate those things, even a concept. Once you are able to monitor the engine on this kind of basis and actually take the time at power, we actually can take a look at concepts going forward of 110% power for limited time durations, because the FADEC is going to monitor those conditions and we'll be able to understand those.
What are the cost economics of this engine?
The cost economics, you're talking to the engineering guy, I think that from the standpoint of the more complex engines, it's going to look very favorable for our customers on that stuff.
And timeline for the availability of this power plant?
This power plant, actually on the Lancair experimental basis, is as they get their aircraft in order, will be immediately available for Lancair on an experimental basis. We are currently in the certification process for the engine. Our objective on this is that we are certifying something very, this is just not a mechanical engine certification, we have a whole software certification process to go through on this. And what we're organizing right now is that our timing of the software certification process and when the OEMs can get flight test credit, we're looking to be able to allow the OEMs to start getting flight test credit in 2009, early in 2009. And then it largely comes out to when we can get the combined engine airframe certificate done. So we are in the midst of certification right now. As an experimental engine, it'll be available prior to the type certified engine. And it's largely comes into is you're talking a whole new degree of integration with the avionics on the airframe now. This is a whole new realm of possibility for the industry, and we're extremely excited about it.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us, Mike. We appreciate the update.
Okay, thank you.
You've been listening to AbWeb's continuing coverage of EAA AirVenture 2008. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting. Thanks for listening.
Presented by Bose Aviation Headset 10, voted number one for the 7th consecutive year in Professional Pilots 2007 Annual Headset Preference Survey. Today's Aviation Headset 10 delivers a highly acclaimed combination of noise reduction, clearer audio, and comfort that remains unmatched. Learn more at Bose.com/headset.